Hi, everyone. You know, when teachers and students and families and administrators talk about the issue of assessment, oftentimes they point to test scores for obvious reasons. Those test scores have a lot of impact. They might also think about things like graduation rates and GPAs for that matter. However, I wonder if we look at those outcome metrics, if we're not skipping some important information that might be really important to understanding how it is that students are learning in a classroom in an educational environment. Maybe the missing metric in education. That's what we're going to be talking about in today's episode of Teaching Matters.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Thank you so much, Trinity. My guest today is Dr. Katie Minahan. She's the Executive Vice President and Chief Impact Officer for Project Lead the Way. She leads a team at Project Lead the Way that focuses on advancing equity, access, and research supporting the educational mission of the organization, including high-impact STEM education. A former classroom teacher and school administrator, Katie has been with Project Lead the Way for approximately 5 years. Katie, it's great to meet you. Thanks for giving me your time today on the podcast.
Oh, Scott, thanks so much for having me. Thrilled to be here. And if you don't mind, I wanted to share that I had a chance to listen to your recent podcast around building confidence for state standardized assessments.
Oh, yeah.
And it really spoke to me for a couple of reasons. I was thinking about it as you were doing the introduction, because one of the things that I was thinking about as a former school leader and district leader was this idea that the state test is one measure, but not the measure.
Yeah.
That there's so many things that we need to be taking into consideration for students. And I also appreciated the real focus on the role of confidence and what that means for students around outcomes and choices. So I just really appreciated that focus in that recent podcast. And I think there's a lot of connections as we think about our work.
That's awesome. If I can figure out how to do it, I'll even put one of those card things up there so people can go back and listen to it. You know, when I did that podcast, and we've talked about testing on this podcast, obviously, you know, off and on, you know, throughout all the seasons of it, because testing is such a prominent feature in schools. And, you know, I often worry as a social scientific researcher that when you put all your eggs into one metric and then you don't carefully interrogate what that metric is actually telling you, then you make assumptions that sometimes end up not being all that tenable. And I do feel like with testing that we make a lot of assumptions about how effective students are in learning, how effective teachers are in teaching, how effective schools are in setting up an educational environment, when in fact, that's not really telling us what is causing the underlying issues, which is why I'm excited to talk to you today. So hopefully we'll unpack some of that.
I look forward to it, and I couldn't agree more.
So let's start by learning a little bit more about who Katie is. So what was your journey into education? How did you, I saw that you went to Vanderbilt as an undergraduate and got your teaching degree. What got you into teaching, and then how did the dots get connected so that you're in your current role as an executive vice president?
My mom was a Head Start teacher. She taught kindergarten in New Hampshire, was a Head Start program for a long time, and then preschool. And so I think from a young age, I just really saw myself, like I spent a lot of time in her classroom, and just this idea of helping students learn and experience life just really spoke to me. And so I just knew from a young age that that's what I wanted to do. And so went to school for that. I taught in Charlotte Mecklenburg schools right out of college. I was an elementary school teacher, and just it continued to fuel my passion for supporting young people and their outcomes. And so my career's winded a little bit, but it's always remained in education. I've had opportunities to work at a few ed nonprofits and work in building leadership and district leadership, and came to Project Lead the Way for a few reasons. You know, I saw the impact that Project Lead the Way had for schools in my district when I was a deputy superintendent, and really the engagement we saw from students and the kind of confidence and excitement that students were building around learning. And so when Project Lead the Way really wanted to focus on research and outcomes for teachers and or for educators and for learners, that really spoke to me as an opportunity to think about how we're measuring impact for students. And so thrilled to be in this role where I have a chance to help kind of think about the work as we support our educators and we support our learners, and we work with our, you know, higher ed partners, our industry partners, to see if we can provide more opportunities for students.
Mm-hmm. And as an organization, can you sort of give the high level description of what Project Lead the Way is? This is the first time we've highlighted the organization on the podcast, so listeners may not be familiar.
Yeah, so Project Lead the Way, we are a pre-K through 12 STEM career-connected learning curriculum provider. So we provide curriculum resources for schools in a couple of different pathways, so biomedical sciences, computer science, and engineering. We do training for teachers, professional learning for teachers. And so we really focus on hands-on applied learning for students. So how do students learn about these fields in a really applicable way? And we think about that continuum. We started as a company that supported high school and then really felt the need to, I think, as we all do, realize high school's great, but it's really late. Like, students need to have these experiences earlier and earlier where they can engage and build confidence and see all these areas where they have interests, passions, skills, and that can really drive the choices that they make.
And with respect to your STEM focus, I mean, you listed out computer science, biomedical engineering. I also noticed that you're starting a cybersecurity initiative. How have you seen, I mean, I know that you've been with the organization for approximately 5 years. Mm-hmm. How have you seen sort of the emphasis within STEM start to change because of things like AI and cybersecurity is relatively new? How's it changing as a topical area for you?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of change over time. So when Project Lead the Way started, we were solely engineering. Like, engineering was the focus. That was, and in part it was because, one, we were hearing that there weren't enough students going into engineering. Just by and large, there wasn't this kind of pipeline in the workforce. And it was also an area that lent itself in the classroom to students really getting engaged in kind of a different kind of learning. And then we've really thought about what are the critical STEM areas that are connected to the careers that exist now, but also the future. And I think what you're really kind of asking about is the question that I know Project Lead the Way have, but I think other organizations, schools in general, have been wrestling with, is this idea of, we don't know what the jobs are going to look like when our students go out. You know, kids who are in kindergarten today, the careers that they're going to be entering when they go into the workforce, some of them don't exist now. And so how do we think about, one, helping students develop skills that will help them with these really in-demand careers right now? So you think about cybersecurity and you think about the role of AI, but also skills that will allow them to adapt and be flexible as things change over time. And so I think about that a lot with computer science. We get asked a lot about the fact that we've seen changes with computer science. It was, for a long time, if you went to college for computer science, you were going to get a job, and we've seen that kind of market shift. And I think it's this kind of mistaken, you know, belief that we were sort of treating a moving target as a fixed target, that like, it's not just about computer science. It's what skills are students developing? How do those apply to different fields? And how do we help students be continuous learners that can then adapt when new technologies like AI comes out? And so we've really been thinking about how do we support teachers with tools like AI, because that's the critical first step. How do we help teachers kind of unpack that, feel comfortable, know how to leverage that? And then how do we think about it across all of the areas that we support for students? And I would just say overall, we really try to think about what are the most kind of relevant in-demand fields that that we want to support students in. And then we have to kind of add to that. Like, we just added advanced manufacturing because that's a place that we're hearing a lot from partners, and really thinking about how do we help students support or develop their skills in those areas.
I really appreciate the way that you talk about that, because I think that, you know, from my perspective in higher ed, you know, after the students get up here, I think that, and I've said this out loud, I think that we have made a mistake in higher ed of equating degrees to careers. And of course, there is a linkage. There's no question about that, especially in a field like computer science. But you are absolutely correct that when the student goes through and obtains and matriculates through that major, they are equipped with life skills that goes beyond just knowing what code to put in a terminal. And, you know, in my field of communication, we don't teach how to click in an Adobe product. That's not, I mean, they learned that along the way, but that's not what we're teaching. We're teaching design skills, we're teaching editing skills and those sorts of things. So I really appreciate the way that you're talking about that broader perspective on what it is that students are actually achieving, whether they're, you know, emphasizing STEM in a K-12 setting or by the time they get to higher education, a major that they have. I think you're spot on with that. Before we get into the topic of engagement, just really briefly, I mentioned before we started recording that one of our previous guests, Edson Barton, the CEO of U-Science, was on the podcast about 6 months ago. And I noticed in the news announcements on Project Lead the Way's website that you all are partnering with U-Science. You want to talk just in a broad sense about what that partnership is?
Yeah, we are so excited about the partnership with U-Science. And as our organization learned more about the work of U-Science, really just thought there were a lot of synergies between the organization. You know, one of the core kind of aspects of their work is this idea of students sort of identifying their aptitudes and sort of mm-hmm. where it makes sense for them to lean in. And so what we've really thought about is, you know, how do we help to direct students and schools out to a resource that can help kind of help students think about where their aptitudes, where their skills are, and, you know, in addition to their interests. But and then for them, thinking kind of the reverse, once students know they have this aptitude, hey, there's this curriculum that might be really interesting to you. There are these courses that you might want to take. So we've really thought about kind of how it can go both ways to support the learners and then the schools that are really trying to help students make those decisions.
One of the things I like about that and the linkage with U-Science is that it unlocks the potential for students who would not normally consider themselves to be STEM students, maybe the more artistic or the more creative, to all of a sudden understand that there are certain aptitudes or orientations that are STEM related that come out of what their interests are. And it opens up new possibilities, unlocks new doors, and I think that's exciting.
I love that. And what you said really resonates with me because one, the opportunity with U-Science does that. And it's also the experience students have. I'm thinking about a middle school student that I was talking to not that long ago who had the opportunity to take a Project Lead the Way Gateway course in middle school. And they said to me, I wouldn't be who I am if I hadn't taken that course. I wouldn't have realized I like coding. I wouldn't have realized these were things that I'm really good at. And that's impacting what I'm going to do next. And so this idea that having an experience for students in the classroom, whether that's, you know, projects or activities or an opportunity to take an aptitude assessment, really helps students figure out some things that they might not have figured out, which can completely mm-hmm. change the direction for them.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about what I wanted to be sort of the focal point for our discussion, which is engagement. Can you start at sort of the top of the pyramid and give a broad definition of what you think engagement is from your background and perspective as a researcher and former teacher, but then start to talk about how that plays a role in how in the types of activities and projects that you help teachers integrate into their classroom by using your program.
I love this focus on engagement because I think it's one of the things that we don't talk enough about in education because it's a little bit hard to define sometimes and hard to measure. And so I think that tends mm-hmm. to be what happens in education. We measure kind of what's easiest, maybe what instead of what's most important. So for my perspective and background, when I think about engagement, I think about a student's kind of ownership and agency in the learning that's happening. So they're not passive receivers of learning. They're helping kind of create and co-create the learning that's in the classroom. They're bringing their ideas. They're bringing their thoughts, their wonders, that piece about students kind of wanting to solve problems that mean something to them. So to me, it's really about sort of active learning and the fact that they're mm-hmm. a part of kind of that development. And so when we think about the work that we do at Project Lead the Way, you were kind of mentioning, we have this, what we call our APB approach, this activity, project, and problem-based approach, which the idea behind that is kind of the activities are a little bit more teacher facilitated while they help students kind of learn skills and they're applying those skills to sort of more defined problems, and then they go into these more ill-defined projects and problems where they're having to take their learning and figure out how to solve it. And what I love the most about the problem part is we let students drive that. So it's not us, like the project might be us kind of giving them kind of this open-ended but still somewhat defined project to kind of solve and apply their skills to. But when it comes to the problem, students really get to bring the things that they're most interested mm-hmm. in or the things that they want to solve. And what I think is most powerful about that is, one, the confidence that it builds for students that they can solve problems that are meaningful in their world. Like, even though they're in sixth grade or they're in ninth grade, that they have the ability to do that, and the connection it makes for them in their local community, that like, these are things that we're interested in, these are things that I see as a problem and can do that. And so what becomes important to, in my opinion, is the ability for teachers to facilitate that for students and know that they don't have to have all the answers. Like, they don't necessarily know all the things that students are going to come up with that they want to solve, but they know how to support students as they're on that kind of journey of figuring that out and solving it. And so I think engagement is such an important indicator, and it's a leading one for all of these other things that kind of matter in terms of measures of success for students as they move through life.
You mentioned earlier the example of the middle school student in a Gateway course. Can you talk a little bit about how your programs scale from developmental all the way up to high school? So you have Project Launch, which I assume is for younger age groups, Gateway in the middle, and then so on and so forth. How does that all fit together, and what are the through lines that sort of go through those pieces of your program?
So what's really important to us is that students, that one, these three kind of big areas in STEM, so biomed, computer science, and engineering, run all the way from pre-K through high school. And as you can imagine, what kindergarten students are doing around engineering, not the same as juniors in high school, but those principles are there. The same with the sort of, you know, durable or transferable skills that students are developing, their critical thinking and their communication. And so we really try to be thoughtful about how that happens all the way through. And then another big aspect is this kind of career connected learning piece. So how are students in elementary school kind of becoming aware of careers and the different careers that are in these fields? Mm-hmm. And then in middle school, they're getting to explore those careers. So it's not just knowing that they're out there and they're connected, but like getting to actually learn more about those fields. How do these projects, you know, doing projects that relate to them? And then really when they move to high school, kind of preparing for careers and kind of planning what they would want to do. And so we really try to think about the developmental level of students. So launch modules are about 10 hours. So depending on how a school wants to implement that, if it's in their, you know, in a classroom setting versus a specials rotation, it could look different. Students might be doing it every day. Students might be doing it once a week. Whereas in middle school and high school, students tend to take it as an elective for either in middle school, it's a quarter-long, high school, they're year-long courses. And so we really spend a lot of time thinking about creating content that helps students really get a chance to explore and connect with careers, develop skills that they'll be able to take with them across career paths, and learn more about those content areas. And the last thing that I'll say that I think is really important and that we're really appreciative of is we have a lot of industry partners that are so invested in what's happening in schools. And so they serve on advisories with us as we design courses to think about what should students be learning about? What is current reality in the workforce in those areas? What tools should we be using? What should we think about? And they weigh in and they help us, you know, along with our higher ed partners and our teachers as well. But I just think that's such an important part, because if we don't continue to make sure we're staying current and relevant, then we're not really helping students. And so that's a really important part as well, that we continue to evolve the content.
And that perspective is so much more, I mean, it's always been important, but it's so much more pertinent today because things change so much more quickly than they did 15, even 10 years ago. So that you really have to stay up to date by having that constant dialogue with people that are in the field, in industry, doing the work. So I appreciate that. When you think about the importance of these types of project and experiential learning opportunities, What have you seen from students that are enrolled in these programs in terms of gains and in metrics that we might be a bit more familiar with, like attendance and graduation rates, college attainment, and those sorts of things?
So we find it really important to kind of, I would say, look in sort of two big buckets of data. So one is what I kind of affectionately refer to as like our small R research, which is where we work with districts around kind of case studies about what they're seeing. And then we sort of do kind of big R, more official research with researchers at universities to look at outcomes. And so when we look at the things that I think most people would think about, so graduation rates, enrollment in post-secondary, enrollment in a STEM field or career or program at higher ed, completion of their degree, we see over and over again that our Project Lead the Way students, the students who've had these experiences, outperform their peers. So we do those studies across states. And so we really do see that students aren't taking, they're taking remedial coursework at a lower rate. They're much more likely to enroll in a STEM major and complete their degree. They tend to go into STEM fields after graduation from either high school or post-secondary. So we monitor those, and those are really important. We also do things every year like survey our students and ask them how engaged they are in their coursework and ask them what their reflection on their skill development. We ask them about what they're thinking about for careers. And likewise, we survey our teachers about their satisfaction and their efficacy for themselves with teaching, but also with students. And so it's really important to sort of, in my mind, triangulate across those sources. So we might be moving the needle on high stakes test scores, which we do see in math and science, but are we seeing students develop confidence, develop STEM identity? That's just as important. And so for me, as an organization, those different aspects of impact are all really important for us to keep our eye on and continue to measure.
When we think about metrics like the ones that you just talked about, oftentimes, again, you said it very eloquently earlier, things that we can measure easily. We can measure college attainment. We can measure test scores, et cetera, et cetera. What about something that's a little bit more squishy, like students' social emotional learning and things like that, motivational issues? What types of, I mean, either anecdotally or the big R research, have you been able to observe with respect to that?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I think we have to continue to push ourselves, even if it's anecdotal at this point in time, can we figure out better ways to measure that over time? So I would say when it comes to things that are more squishy, whether it's student agency or social emotional learning, from our perspective, we do that a couple of ways. One are we engage students in focus groups during the year where we ask them questions and we hear about what they're doing. We have teachers report to us what's happening. We go out into classrooms and see what's going on and talk to students and hear from them. And right now, I'd say kind of the best way we've landed on kind of a more scalable way to do that is student self-reports through surveys. Mm-hmm. We don't have, I would say we've spent a lot of time with some of our higher ed partners thinking about how could we do this if we did maybe a research study that had, you know, rubrics and observations where people went into classrooms and we measured things that way. And so we've talked about, is that something that we want to do in the future? Yeah. And so maybe we could do that. So it is something that I don't have a great solution, and I think that's true. Yeah. In education in general, we're wrestling with those. How do we measure them? And so we're trying, I think, to collect data in the best ways we can at this moment to understand that and also look towards what are ways we could do this better in the future and what could that look like?
It's a very fair answer. I mean, I've been studying issues related to motivation and affect really for my entire career, and you know, surveys work, and you know, you can demonstrate reliability and defend validity at some level. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we also know that when you talk to a really effective teacher, she or he is able to describe it in a way that you may not be able to replicate on a survey or a traditional research design, but the teachers know it intuitively if their students are engaged in a way that sort of gets them mentally into the learning activity rather than elsewhere. And I think that's a fascinating research problem, and yet one that is hard to come up with solutions for, but nonetheless very important for all of us to stay attuned to, because I do think that it is sort of like the one of the most important things for students is for them to be engaged in learning. I mean, I totally buy into that, right? And if we can figure out ways to do that, even if we can't perfectly measure it, then I think we're doing a lot of good. When we were talking earlier about standardized tests, and I don't want to use this conversation as just a, you know, a way to bag on standardized tests, but as you think about comparing and contrasting the type of data that you're working with in terms of engagement, and then what we get if we only look at the standardized test, what do you think standardized tests might potentially conceal that you're able to uncover with either the more formal or the anecdotal research and observations that you're running across?
I mean, broadly, what I think is in education, we just have to expand our definition of achievement and success. Like, we just have to put more things under that umbrella. And the first thing that stands out to me is when students are able to engage in hands-on learning. So whether they're doing a design challenge or they're working with a case study, students who sometimes weren't visible in a positive way in the traditional system, so maybe they didn't test well, or maybe they didn't get A's in their courses, actually are able to showcase the skills that they have, because their skills might be in the iterative design process. Their skills might be in collaborating with a team, and that's not coming out on their standardized test. And so the first thing to me is the fact that we can see students who you might have overlooked in the traditional system. The other thing I think about is tests. I mean, and we've come a long way in standardized tests. Like, they're significantly better than they were before. There's still limitations to what you're really able to measure from students. And so when you can think about a teacher being able to observe students as they're engaging in kind of a project or problem in their classroom, and when they're demonstrating, they're at a showcase and they're presenting their solution and communicating that to, you know, whether it's the business or industry that they solved it for, those are real skills that are going to serve them in post-secondary or in their career path and in life and just in general. And so while I think there are important things from standardized tests when it comes to skills that students are mastering and just the ability to showcase those, there's just so much that you can't reveal unless you look at some of these other pieces. And I think it lets students be more successful who maybe wouldn't otherwise have been.
A flip side of that question, and I really love the way that you articulate the fact that you're able to uncover assets that a student has that wouldn't be revealed on the test. There's a flip side of that question. If a student is, you know, experiencing academic difficulty, if they're reaching that level of crisis, if you only get that from the standardized test, which is a milestone for the student, it's like too late. And so what happens, or have you been able to observe evidence that this type of a learning approach gives teachers better early warning signs of academic distress that maybe could remain hidden, but for, you know, this type of engaged learning?
Yeah, I think we've all heard of the, you know, analogy for a state assessment being the autopsy. It's so late, you can't do anything with that data to help improve things for students. And so I think that's a really good point. And I wouldn't say that's just true for Project Lead the Way. I think anything where teachers are engaging in the classroom really intentionally about observational collection of data for students allows you to intervene earlier. So maybe the student is successful on some aspects of their project-based learning or, you know, in these STEM fields, but there's a lot of things that you figure out in the beginning. One aspect I hear a lot from teachers for students that's really hard at first is failure, is the fact that, like, when you're doing an engineering design challenge, you're going to fail. You're going to lay out the best idea, the best thinking, and you're going to realize that parts of it aren't working and that you have to iterate on it. And what's beautiful about that is that's real life. That's everybody in their job. That's everybody in their lives. And so at first, that's something we've learned a lot from teachers, is that's really difficult for students if they haven't been set up in an environment that kind of supports failure as a learning opportunity and a way to kind of improve and think about how you take that experience and build on that and change the outcome. And as students go through, like, that's what I love most about talking to students. I was with some middle schoolers a couple of weeks ago talking to them about they were building these therapeutic toys with their 3D printer to go to a rehab hospital. And I was asking them, I said, okay, so how did your plan work from the beginning? Did everything go the way exactly that you thought it was going to go? And they were like, no, not at all. Like, here's all the things that didn't go the way we thought they were going to go and how we pivoted and learned from that and changed it. And that's one, something that teachers have to support, a safe environment in the classroom for that to happen. And we have to teach students that that's okay. And so I know that's a long way around this answer of having these moments in the classroom where you're engaging with students and seeing, visibly seeing their work can allow you as a teacher to get so much information to intervene earlier and help students where they are struggling.
Yeah, I totally agree with this. And even in my classes, when I talk to students about the types of activities or assignments that I want them to do, oftentimes I will describe them as, you know, hopefully being high impact, low risk, because, you know, I want them to, you know, in an ideal world, I want them to come out of the class going, okay, that was some work, but I got something out of it. But yet at the same time, I also don't want them to have to say, I have to do it perfectly, because oftentimes, especially in the field like mine, where there's some creative choices that students have to make, and they have to learn their own aesthetic to be able to make those choices well, whether it's editing a video, doing a layout and design project for an infographic, whatever. They have to develop their own aesthetics for that. And they have to go through some failure to really be able to develop their own aesthetic tastes and their own style. And they have to learn that early. Otherwise, you know, it's really hard for them to really progress because they always do the safe thing. And that's not really how you learn. So I appreciate that. I think the last question that I have, and you started to address this a little bit earlier in one of your comments, but obviously, you know, when you take this type of a teaching approach that is very project and experiential based, the teacher is so important in that. I mean, this is not the type of learning opportunity that you turn over to a screen and say, go tackle it. I mean, the teacher being interactive with the student is so critical. So what is it that Project Lead the Way really emphasizes in terms of teachers, professional development, training, ongoing support to help them really excel in this type of teaching approach?
There's a few things that I think are critical to the kind of approach that we take. The first is our core training. That's the professional learning for teachers. So that's the idea that often, particularly at the high school level, people who are teaching engineering were not engineers and they don't have an engineering background. And how do we help them not only learn the content and feel confident in that, but then this idea of an approach that is more facilitator instead of, you know, kind of leading the instruction, where students are going to be, it's messy learning and they're going to be getting into it. So we have really robust professional learning where teachers are in cohorts and they're engaging like a student. They're doing the project students are doing. And it's the thing that we hear most from teachers is how powerful that experience is. And the cohort approach, where those are people that they phone a friend when they need help. Like, that's the group. We have a community on our platform where teachers can reach out and they ask. And I think the other part, or believe that the other part that's really important, is our master teachers. Those are the individuals who do the professional learning, but they aren't people like me who haven't been in the classroom for a while. It's been a minute since I was teaching elementary school. These are people who are still in the classroom. So they're training me on principles of engineering. They are teaching principles of engineering. So as a new teacher, I can reach out to that person and say, I'm overwhelmed. I'm really struggling on how to do this, that it is a person who is going through the same experience and can really support their learning. So I would say the upfront professional learning for teachers through core training, and then the ongoing support of the cohort of teachers that they're with, their master teacher that they can reach out to. And then we try to engage teachers through other learning events where they're coming together. We're thinking about additional supports that they need. And we hear from our teachers, you know, what are their needs? What do they feel like they need more support with? Because it is a shift for a lot of teachers in their instructional practice and how they facilitate their classroom and the content that they're focused on.
I know that some of the teachers in the surrounding community of Athens. And I don't know that any of our schools are affiliated with you, but the idea of doing project and place-based learning is very much a part of, you know, some of the educators around here that are, I think, really high impact. And, you know, one of the things that I hear them say when I talk to them about these types of activities is what you just said, that there needs to be a very good peer network to bounce ideas off of, to learn from, to come up with new ways of doing, you know, maybe new locations to do projects around, you know, Southeast Ohio and those sorts of things. But also understanding how to balance time, because on one sense, these projects make the time much more edifying with the students, because you're not just sort of doing the same thing that has always been done via lectures or showing videos or whatever. So the time is a lot more engaging for the teacher, but yet at the same time, it also takes additional prep to be able to figure out how to actually make the scale across a classroom of 25 students well. And so the point that you make about having good peer support, I've witnessed that with the teachers around here that are really trying to be innovative and thinking, you know, thinking about these meatier learning opportunities. So
yeah, and like we've learned a lot from teachers, just learning how to use the equipment and supplies. So you might not be well-versed in this computer software or this tool, and time for teachers to explore that and know, to your point, how to set things up. It's different when you're setting up labs or design challenges than just pulling up a slide deck. And so being able to help teachers think thoughtfully about that. And we all know time is a really precious commodity in schools, and how to help teachers so that they're not feeling like they're losing time because of that sort of adjustment in the classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. Kitty, it's been great getting to have a chance to talk with you. Are there any topics that you were excited to talk about that we haven't covered yet?
You know, the only thing that I want to just share, because I think it's really important as we think about the power of students being able to kind of see themselves as problem solvers, is so a couple of years ago, Project Lead the Way, we were out, I was out with our CEO doing some classroom visits, and students were really were engaged from the Project Lead the Way classroom with some other classrooms in the school solving problems in their community. There was an issue in the river in their community. And we really thought, you know, we see this a lot when we go out into schools, but not everybody sees what middle school and high school students are capable of. And so we started this community impact award where students can really showcase how they're using the skills they're developing in the classroom to solve problems in their local community. And so I would just encourage people, we've got that up on our website. You can see the things that students are able to do. So for those who maybe this is kind of a new way of thinking about the experience in the classroom, I think the videos we have on there of some of our students really is powerful in thinking about the skills that we are helping students develop and the experience that they're having where they are feeling empowered to solve problems in their local community and make a difference, and what that's going to mean for those students as they go through life. And I just think that's so powerful.
That's really cool. I will go back and take a look at that, because I always love stories like that. I think they're especially important now because of for various reasons, I feel like either K-12 or higher education, the value of education has gotten reduced to things that I wouldn't reduce it to. I think that the impact that not only that educators have on students, but then the impact that that education has on a community is a story that has to be told over and over and over again. So kudos to you all for developing that award. I think that's really great. So. Well, I want to thank you for your time, and it's great to meet you, and take care.
Thanks so much, Scott. Thrilled to have been here. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely. My guest today has been Dr. Katie Minahan. She's the Executive Vice President and Chief Impact Officer for Project Lead the Way. If you want to learn more about Project Lead the Way, we will have a link to their website in the text that accompanies the podcast, either on YouTube or on the podcasting platforms. Thank you for listening to Teaching Matters. If you have ideas, thoughts, or suggestions, please feel free to reach out by emailing us at teachingmatterspodcast, all one word, all lowercase, at ohio.edu. Take care, and we hope you all have a great day.